Hello and welcome back to Hitchcast. We have a great episode planned for you today with a very special guest and a friend of ours, Paul Valenti from Viso Trust. So we're going to get a little bit more into Paul's background here shortly. But just wanted to remind everyone that if you have ideas or thoughts of what you'd like to discuss on these episodes, we'd love to hear your thoughts. This is really meant for the community and by the community. And so we'd love to hear your thoughts and your comments. So without further ado, I'd love to introduce our very special guest, Paul Valenti, who I've had the pleasure of knowing for the past 5 or 6 years now, I guess, Paul. Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
Great. Great. How are you, Michael?
Good. Hanging in there. You know, it's a weird time for everyone. But doing really well. And it's a pleasure to talk to you. We've had an opportunity to speak over the past few months, and I love what you and the team are building. And I'd love to just kind of introduce it to everyone else. This is a really, really important topic for CISOs and the security community in general. And so maybe we could just kind of jump right in. I would love to get a little bit more about your history and sort of why you chose the space you did to build your first company. And maybe take us a little bit along that journey.
Yeah, sounds great. So, you know, like many CISOs out there, I'm a longtime technology professional. I've been essentially working in technology for a couple decades here, a little more than that. And I really got into third-party cyber risk management. You know, after starting to specialize in security, I got a job at a company that was a technology startup that is now Blackbaud. We were making corporate social responsibility software. And this was really in the early days, when we called them application service providers, and SaaS kind of wasn't really a thing yet. And what I found in that role is, selling to really large companies. So corporate social responsibility, things like volunteer management, corporate giving, at that time were things companies only incredibly large, were interested in. So I essentially built a security program and was in charge of kind of selling that and presenting that to these Fortune 1000 companies. So we essentially sold to 250 of the Fortune 1000, and I was on the receiving end of what we now call third-party cyber risk management. And I had some key observations there, which really stuck with me, throughout my security leadership and CISO career. So what I observed there was that companies were spending really a lot of resources trying to mitigate this risk, new risk that was associated with sharing your data, outside your four walls, outside your data center. And they were willing to spend a lot of money on it, but it was broken. And the reason that it was so broken is that there was really just a complete disconnect between business stakeholders and between these teams. And these teams were really swimming in terms of trying to actually derive risk. I was getting 3,000 questionnaires. It was taking me, my team, weeks to complete them, if not, more in some cases. And when they would get these back, they would be at a loss in terms of deriving any real information from them. And to take that a step further, their business stakeholders were completely disengaged from the process. To them, in the best case, it was kind of like a nuisance. And in the worst case, it was outright hostility, right? These folks, they want to pick the solutions they want. They want to rapidly, deploy strategic initiatives, right? And here were these teams that they had, distant relationships with, really slowing things down and getting in the way. In some cases, initiating reviews, days before contract signing, right? So that sort of thing. Anyway, so that's kind of where my journey started with this. And when it came time to solve this problem at LendingClub, which was, rocket shipping towards IPO and needed to bring on new technology and solutions as quickly as possible, I spent some late nights, calling what I'd learned and built some a unique process, unique risk components, and I took that to Russ Sherman, my great friend and co-conspirator here, who was my first direct report at Lending Club, and he said, "Wow, this is great. There's some amazing innovations here, but you know, Paul, I don't want to do any of this, right? So let's build an app, right?" And that's what we did, and that's really, you know, where the journey started to get much more serious, and that's what really led to, you know, us doing thought leadership in this space, and through the feedback that we got, building the belief that we could solve this for everybody.
Absolutely fantastic. Thanks for walking through that. And you know, you are now in line with other extremely talented CISOs that I've had an opportunity to work with, who during the course of their daily grind and business figured out how to innovate and had figured out how to make something that much better in their daily lives. You know, kind of, it was a personal pain, and that personal pain is now turned into a toolkit and ultimately a platform for the rest of the community. So, I mean, you truly are kind of the white hatter, you know, looking out for everyone, which is one of the things I love about you. So, and Russ as well. I'm curious. So, you know, that was getting to this point. Now the world has changed quite a bit. We're, you know, if you haven't read, in a global pandemic, entering a global recession. But yet, security and the third party security kind of theme seems to be intensifying. At least from my view, this is an area where when someone contacts us for a retained search for a CISO, that's usually one of the top areas that they're worried about from a branding and trust perspective. Yet, it doesn't seem to me that things have gotten any more efficient in what you've described in this process, and that, you know, this platform, this solution that you're referring to, really could be very, very interesting. Not just getting up to you know, a COVID post world, but actually, you know, looking at it right now, I don't know if you would agree with that. Is it become more intense? You know, the idea of protecting your third party risk, and you know, now that we're all remote and we're people are moving heavily into the cloud, I'm curious what your thoughts are around that.
Yeah. So I would say it has been, you know, steadily evolving, and then it's definitely accelerated pretty considerably over the last couple of years, and then with a final kind of pretty extreme acceleration here in you know, our pandemic days. So you know, the first driver is, you know, as you already mentioned, really is, you know, what the Gartners and Foresters of the world call digital transformation, right? As companies, you know, develop you know, more ways to serve other companies with technology solutions, that kind of teases, you know, our data and our operations out of our own control, and so that has obviously continued to progress with you know, more than with 80% of companies essentially saying that they're going to be, you know, close to 100% third party by 2022.
Wow.
But if you add to that that attacks have become more sophisticated, the threat landscape has evolved for essentially more and more attackers to be focused, you know, throughout kind of the ecosystem of companies rather than just kind of targeting, you know, large well-known brands. The threats have spread even more to third parties, you know, than they were in a very recognizable way. So at this point, we're getting breaches, you know, all the time in these areas. And they, you know, like recently we've had, you know, Blackbaud, Twitter, which is, you know, is everything, right? I mean, every company has a Twitter account. They weren't all in that 130, but there isn't any company that isn't concerned about, you know, looking at the security of what they're doing with Twitter, right? You know, Fiserv, Magento, Click2Gov, and all these, you know, you hear about them, and they may not be the vendor that affects you, but if you look at each of these vendors, you know, like something like Click2Gov, you know, 80 local governments, right? Something like Fiserv, you know, many smaller banks, right? You know, lots of companies, you know, use Blackbaud, right? And so each one of these, you know, has a really wide impact. And when you hear about any of these sorts of breaches, as a CISO, you need to find out whether it impacts you, right? You need to inquire. You have to ask the question, right, of your vendors. So so that visibility is really pushing this to the top. And then if you the last kind of nail in the coffin or the really the opportunity I think here in terms of embracing technology more and getting more from technology, as long as you can address this risk, is really the pandemic, right? Companies were kind of recognizing that that co-location and focusing you know your staff beyond your core competencies has been a luxury, right? At this point, you know, the rug's been pulled out from under. We no longer have that luxury, right? We have to embrace remote. We have to focus our, you know, in many cases, shrinking budgets on staff that are focused on our company's core competency. That means that we've got to outsource to save money and to go fast.
Interesting. Yeah, I absolutely love and agree with what everything you've said. One thing that struck me is when CISOs have to organize and get this as a major priority in their organizations, from our view here at Hitch, we actually see that this is a pretty big miss in many security organizations, that they, in other words, they don't have their organization set up beyond the sort of administrative third-party questionnaire. They're not really thinking critically about it. Like you said in the beginning, this was everything from we don't want to do it to like just, you know, visceral response to, and now, okay, they have to do it. But are these organizations really set up to handle a very thoughtful third-party response and really trust ring here? I mean, do they need to be reorganized in a way? And if so, like what are some of, you know, in the client engagements that you've had, what's worked? I mean, obviously without naming specific clients, but what's worked and what hasn't? Like when you walk into these organizations and they're just completely disorganized, you know, and it obviously it can't fall on the CISO every time too, right?
Like right.
These individuals are not superheroes, even though they may look like it on the outside. Just curious what you're seeing here, because this is it's kind of a mess from our perspective when we go in and we're trying to get the narrative right. And we find out, wow, they really only have this one person over here just handling 90% of the questionnaires, 90% of the, you know, the trust conversations with vendor, you know, with these environments. So I'd love to hear your thoughts around that too.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, Michael. And there's essentially three things that we see that all get back to one kind of central problem, I'm going to save the central problem for the end. But what we see is essentially folks setting up processes that they think, you know, are going to be very very thorough and effective, and then a year in, you know, they're happy with the process itself, or maybe the risk intelligence that they're getting to some degree, but they've only reviewed 10% of their vendors. Right. So there's essentially a scalability problem right at the center of this. The second way that manifests itself is kind of the other end of the spectrum. Folks, maybe they've been through that path, down that path. Maybe they've taken a crack at it, or they've been responsible for this actually doing the reviews themselves. And so they see these issues, or perhaps they saw a program at an earlier company fail, and they kind of give up from the beginning. They instead say, okay, we can only do so much. Let's set up, you know, some sort of a very cursory kind of high level, kind of a checkbox sort of a process, right? And those companies, you know, they can put down that they're reviewing vendors, but they are increasingly concerned about risk, right? They talk to me and they say, you know, Paul, I'm worried we're going to have a breach, right? I'm getting through all the vendors, but I know I'm not getting any meaningful risk intelligence from this, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's a smaller kind of market segment in terms of numbers, but is the case at some very large companies that are very risk averse. So some organizations essentially say, okay, I'm just going to accept, you know, the inefficiencies that my organization is going to have from having a very deep due diligence process, and we're just going to have, you know, much less technology adoption. We're going to be much slower. We're going to innovate much less. And we see this, you know, primarily in large financial services where, you know, some of these bigger banks, you know, have 100 people working on this problem, and they've
they have essentially
constrained their business so much that they have technology footprints in terms of the numbers of vendors that are way smaller than companies in other industries of similar size, and they're taking 6 months, a year and a half to onboard new vendors, and so they're essentially taking an innovation hit, right? So that's kind of what we see, and once again, the central issue here is scalability, right? What folks typically see as a good process or a process that delivers some sort of risk ROI just isn't scalable, right? There's just too many vendors. And too much work for companies, to be able to stomach.
Yeah. Do you think the gap will ever be closed or closing, either with your service or otherwise, where getting these vendors onboarded, will actually come down in time? I mean, is this sort of a global trend, or is it going the other way, unfortunately? What are you seeing there? That's a really good point.
So thank you for asking me that question. And audience, I did not tell Michael to ask you that.
Yeah, this is not a sales job.
but I absolutely think that this can be solved. And I absolutely think that we're going to solve it. And there's a couple of reasons that I think that that this can be solved, and I mentioned that scalability issue, and it's really about due diligence. We all know that we have to do due diligence. It doesn't make sense to start talking to a vendor about vulnerability management if they don't even do vulnerability management, right? So you have to do due diligence. You have to get the lay of the land with your vendors and see where they're at, and you have to address that before trying to go deeper into the operational responsibilities that you're going to have to start addressing with these huge populations of third parties. But the fact is, if you don't solve that due diligence problem, you won't have the resources to do implementation security. You won't have the resources to essentially incident response over your vendor population, or other types of attack surface monitoring or breach detection, right, on these vendors, which you're going to have to start doing, right? But you're not going to have the resources if you can't get through due diligence. And so we believe that we can, automate this due diligence problem at a massive scale while bringing teams, security teams from organizations closer together, and essentially contributing to the security of entire communities by freeing up resources to focus on real security by automating this due diligence problem.
That's fascinating. One of the trends that we're seeing on the search side is this younger companies, startups, and the like, really emphasizing their need for a CISO due to the focus on enterprise sales and making it appear as though, and giving the impression to these potential customers that they have a very strong narrative and posture around security. And yet when we start digging in as to what's been built, naturally they're startups, so they haven't really put something together yet. They're looking for their first leader. And it seems that sometimes they're just trying to put the impression out there. I will say that there are companies that are searching for CISOs right now with the best intentions and going about it not the right way, and really focusing in on a compliance and sales enablement, but really have no intention of investing in the overall sponsorship of the CISOs organization, building out the ranks. And I see this as a very parallel problem to what you're dealing with, which is, you're coming in and they're trying to make the appearance that they're, locking things down for third party vendor assessments and really being strict on it. But yet the process is a little bit, awry. Right. And so I was just curious, You know, do you see that there's a connection here? Do you think that this is going to get more intense over time? I mean, we're in a real critical part right now. We have to catch up on the defensive side in order to be offensive. And it's just really hard to do that when you're just letting minutia and administration get in the way. I'm just a little confused about it. And, you know, love your thoughts.
Yeah. You know, I hear you, and I think you're absolutely right. And that is a kind of a complicated aspect of this space that, you know, CISOs are conflicted on this issue, and they're in a very difficult position. Given that it has been so untenable in the past and failed to deliver, you know, real risk ROI in a lot of ways, you know, many CISOs have kind of been encouraged to kind of, you know, really not want to work on it, right? You know, they because it can be something, they see it as an unsolvable problem, right? And at the same time, you can make effort to solve it and really hurt your company. You know, you can essentially get in the way of strategic initiatives. You can, you know, burn bridges with stakeholders. You can really put yourself between, you know, success, you know, the success of your company and your stakeholders. So, you know, I was once, you know, talking to somebody about a process that they had set up and you know, they said that they had essentially created a process where they were the bottleneck for business, right? And, you know, how else can you spell the recipe, right, for political death of the CISO, which is already such a challenging job politically? And this is kind of like, you know, one of the focal points of that real difficulty as a CISO. So it does really require, you know, if there's a paradigm shift here, you know, I'm back to scalability. Imagine if you could get all the risk intelligence you needed from due diligence, really at your fingertips effortlessly. And just whenever, you know, 30 vendors that, you know, that your business stakeholders are thinking of taking a look at, you could just spit out for them, you know, the risk breakdown for each of those, you know, before they even really go deep into inquiry with those vendors. Now that would completely change the dynamic, right? Right now the dynamic is, you know, you've got a review going on, you know, maybe just a couple of finalists because that's what you have resources for. That review might even continue into while you're in contract with one of those solutions. And then, you know, at the 11th hour, the CISO has this decision of like, oh, wow, we've come up with some pretty high risks here. You know, am I going to take this to the risk committee? What are we going to do, right? And they're not just thinking about communicating. They're thinking about, you know, can we really do anything about this? Is it too far along? What's the impact of trying going to do to my overall program, right? That's not helping you mitigate risk. That's not helping you move the needle, you know, for security at your company. But it's what you have to do, right? But if we can eliminate questionnaires, which is what we're doing, if we can make it so essentially your next due diligence is already done, right? Because we've essentially built a social due diligence network that empowers vendors to provide their information in a way that is always there and always continuously available. Yet unique risk is derived for unique customer and prospect relationships. Then it changes. The dynamic is completely different. Now you're in the position to focus your resources not on gathering information from vendors, but on deepening those business stakeholder relationships and giving them information to incorporate just like they would any other business requirements, right, in their selection processes. It's a challenging thing, and it is going to take, you know, raising awareness and people understanding that there is, that this is solvable, right, which right now, a lot of people think it isn't.
Yeah, it's a great point. Another question that's coming from what we're seeing in trends is that really since COVID, the consistency and escalation and intensity of the communication that a CISO has with the board, with the executive team, has risen exponentially. I mean, we've seen this as a line item on, you know, specifications that we're putting in. It's not just about coming in and building the program, but it's also about communicating the value of the and the results of the program every day. And so I'm curious if this particular topic, do you feel is being represented as a you know, critical DEFCON 1 type of situation at the board level, at the executive level, or do we still have a long way to go before they recognize this as just, you know, purely a nuisance and more of a, you know, potentially a, you know, a revenue opportunity or just, you know, just something that they need to be more efficient on? I'm curious your thoughts on
that.
I haven't really seen it as much, but you would be much closer to it.
Yeah, I would say no. I would say generally it's not a board level conversation yet. I think it needs to be. I think it will be. I think that again, what it takes for that is CISOs having a complete view of their vendor populations, a complete view of who they're sharing sensitive data with, a complete view of essentially, you know, things like what business units are bringing on the most risk, right? Mm-hmm. So these are the things that mean that we've got some levers to pull, right? There's information, CISOs need to have information and levers to pull, things that you can do about it before they're going to bring it to the board, right? There's no reason to bring to the board, you know, hey, you know, there's lots of, we're using lots of third parties and we're going to keep using them and they're bringing on lots of risk and there's nothing we can do about it, right? No, that's not something that you're going to bring to your board, right? But if there's, hey, we've got, you know, this is our universe of third party risk. You know, we look pretty good in these areas, but in these areas, you know, we're really, risk is highly concentrated. And this is what I think we should do to address that. Well, that's a meaningful conversation, right? And CISOs need to be in that position before it makes sense for them to put this information out there.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I still feel like a lot of the onus is on the CISO to make sure that narrative is handled. I mean, it's not as though third-party risk, I guess, holes in the infrastructure or holes it hasn't been in the news lately as the cause of many of these compromises and breaches, right? It's been front and center as to, well, how did this happen, right? You read the transcripts and turns out it was more times than not, it was the third-party solution that allowed for the gateway to get in. And so it's not as though they don't know what's happening. It's just, you know, I feel like, again, the CISO is responsible for making sure that this communication is upheld, is constant barrage. Would you agree with that? Or is that?
I agree completely. And it's a fascinating thing because there's a lot of times where we're dealing with third-party risk where people aren't even really kind of seeing it as such or thinking about it that way. So a great example of that is Equifax, right? Mm-hmm. You know, every banking institution, every credit related institution, any company that takes personal information and then runs a credit check on somebody, you know, was essentially, you know, affected by Equifax. And where we see that is kind of financial services having to wake up, you know, about identity and about in general, right? And so there was no financial services company that didn't have to review, you know, their identity, practices with regard to customers in the wake of Equifax, and that's essentially having to, you know, find out what happened with a third party and then adjust your security program as a result. Now, this is a situation where, you know, I doubt there is anybody that said, I'm not going to use Equifax anymore. It's such an important, one of these very few important credit bureaus, right? But it definitely had an impact on how folks do business, right? So there's a lot of things that happen that are third party breaches that we deal with kind of on a case by case basis, that don't necessarily bring up the entire problem, if that makes sense.
No, it does. Yeah, it does make sense. And you know, this is a technology forum as much as it is, you know, a CISO forum. What do you think I know you came most recently from a company that focused in AI and machine learning, and I'd love to know, is there any technology that can be used in that area for this topic? Is that applicable? Or are we still doing human to human? Is that how it's going to get done? Or is there things that we can anticipate here through technology that will actually make this problem a little bit more achievable to get through?
You know, that's a great question. And you know, I for a long time, like many CISOs, you know, CISOs get bombarded with kind of like AI this, AI that.
Right.
And a lot of times, unfortunately, you know, when we take a close look, you know, we find that there's really not much of substance there. Right. And that's led to, you know, really downright dismissal, you know, and righteously so, you know, of solutions kind of touting AI as the panacea.
Right.
That being said, you know, we started working with, you know, kind of dabbling with AI technologies back when I was at Lending Club. And as you mentioned, you know, it was really a deep dive at ASAP, you know, working with, really one of the best, machine learning and natural language processing, you know, teams, in the world. And there, you know, we had an opportunity to focus on solving real security problems with machine learning and natural language processing. And that really, the kind of the methodology that I learned for attacking large language problems there, you know, was really a missing piece for us with regard to solving this problem. You know, we knew that we could better engage vendors. We knew that we could, you know, streamline processes and workflows and eliminate tons of work. But really the piece that gives us kind of like the 10x, you know, win in terms of how many reviews you can get out of your limited, you know, reviewing resources, is really around natural language processing. You know, we the fact that if you focus in the right way with regard to language, you can really, automate it in an automated way, interpret, security related language. And that's what we're doing. And that's essentially what our shop is. We're a shop dedicated to the automated interpretation of security related language. And I believe that along with the social aspects of our platform are really revolutionary and really eliminate all the work that all the humans don't want to do in this process and
That's
speed
right.
it up in an amazing way.
I love that. This is such pertinent and information. And one of the reasons that I wanted to see if you'd be willing to do this today would be that the timing, I think, is really perfect. I mean, there's this onslaught of how is the CISO's sort of evolution in scope and sponsorship and just overall complexity of the organization. How has it sort of risen during COVID and as a result of COVID? And, you know, unfortunately, it takes a global pandemic to make the recognition of the CISO's role at the pure executive layer. But, you know, what we'll take it. you and other CISOs out there are,
yep.
you know, in our minds, are your superheroes. And I'm curious, how can other CISOs and companies learn more about this topic from you? And how do we get in touch with you? I'm sure people will find that this is a great topic to want to sort of piggyback on.
Yeah. Visit us, of course, on, you know, www.visotrust.com. You can always, I can always hit me up on LinkedIn as well, easily accessible there. I'm always open for discussion and you know, highly available for discussion on this topic. This is our passion. You know, Russ and I have, you know, spent more than 10 years on both sides of this issue, both on the vendor side and on the reviewer side. And, you know, this is really our life's work here. So, you know, I'll never turn down a meaningful conversation on this topic. So yeah, feel free to reach out.
That's fantastic. No, so much fun. We definitely should do this again. Maybe we could get some other CISOs to talk through the topics as well. And just really, really appreciate your time. Best of luck to you. And of course, safety and health to your family as well. But thank you for your time here, Paul. We greatly appreciated having you.
Well, thank you, Michael. It's a privilege and always a pleasure.
Awesome. We will talk to you soon. And thank you very much, everyone, for joining Hitchcast.